Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, May 24, 2023. The World Bank and the United Nations donate $70 million for projects aimed at supporting women in South Sudan.
It will finance the establishment of the Women's Economic Empowerment Centers as a space for livelihood and social skills training.
And Sudanese trapped in Khartoum narrate their survival skills as fighting continues in the capital.
We obtained quantities of flour from some agents and distributed it to a large number of poor citizens in the neighborhood and solved the problem of flour shortages. We have some security, economic and health problems.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Fighting that broke out in Khartoum on April 15 shows no sign of stopping, and citizens are paying a big price. Residents in the capital city are enduring food shortages, electricity outages, and constant fear. Sid Ahmed Ibrahim has more from Khartoum in this report narrated by Vincent Macquarie.
Civilians in Khartoum describe brutal conditions in the city as a result of the violence that broke out there in mid-April. Many say they have nearly run out of supplies. Markets are shuttered and imports are no longer entering the country. Yusuf Ahmed is a merchant in the city.
Some people cannot bear this situation. We ask God for safety. Me, as a grocer, the situation is very bad. There are no goods. And we feel insecure because we could be looted at any moment. Some merchants now store goods there.
According to the United Nations, nearly 19 million Sudanese could suffer from food insecurity due to the conflict. Advocates said $445 million is needed to support refugees fleeing Sudan and to provide aid in the next 6 months. In the absence of a functioning government and relief organizations, citizens in some neighborhoods of Khartoum organize voluntary initiatives to help alleviate the crisis for the poorest citizens. Hassan from a neighborhood called Jabra explained how citizen groups are coming together to deal with the impact of the conflict.
We obtained quantities of flour from some agents and distributed it to a large number of poor citizens in the neighborhood and solved the problem of flour shortages. We have some security, economic and health problems. We will form three committees concerned with the health situation, the living situation and the security situation. We will work to collect information, and in the same way we address the flour shortage, we will try to provide health and medical services for all patients in the neighborhood by bringing in doctors and medicines. If we are not able, we will offer moral support in these circumstances.
Residents say the situation is getting worse each day. They fear the longer the markets are closed and relief supplies are unable to reach those trapped in the city, the greater the human suffering will be. For Sid Ahmed Ibrahim in Khartoum, Sudan, Vincent Macquarie, VOA News.
From Khartoum, we move to Nairobi. Humanitarian organizations are scrambling to provide much-needed assistance to millions of Sudanese affected by the weeks-long conflict between Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Aliona Sienko is the regional spokesperson for Africa at the International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, based in Nairobi, Kenya. She says there's urgent need for health, water and electricity services after a near-total collapse of basic services in Khartoum and other states across Sudan.
We're all very hopeful because any kind of respite that Sudanese civilians can get after the horrific unrelentless, more than 5 weeks of continuous fighting that they have been through. This is a horrible experience, and people have run out of all supplies, run out of food, run out of water. So, of course, any kind of break that they can get just to be able to go out to resupply is hugely important and will make a difference for them. And for us, of course, and for our teams, it's important because they can move around safely and be able to can better do their work.
Yes, and fighting has been reported in parts of Khartoum and Darfur yesterday, Tuesday, and today, Wednesday, but also relative calm has been noted in the capital and other parts of the country. Is the ceasefire holding?
Well, I think you've described very accurately what we are seeing on the ground. So, yes, we can say that the ceasefire is somehow holding, although the situation is quite volatile. And we should not forget that it's beside the fighting, we're also facing another major challenge, which is lawlessness, the criminality. The looting has been, unfortunately, quite widespread. So it is still, yes, we're seeing positive dynamics, but it is still quite difficult environment to operate in.
Yes, on that point, the short-term ceasefire and the Jeddah declaration before it was primarily designed for humanitarian purposes, for the flow of aid and humanitarian response. Are humanitarians finally free to move and deliver much-needed assistance to millions of people who are in need in Sudan?
We've been making some progress, although it, as I said, it is still remains a very difficult environment to operate in. But a few weeks earlier, we managed to fly surgical supplies into Port Sudan, so we managed to deliver those medical supplies to the warehouses of the Ministry of Health, and they started delivering them into the hospitals in Khartoum. So there is some progress that we are seeing because that we were able to make because the security situation enabled us to do so. And also we are working very closely together with the Sudanese Red Crescent Society, and their volunteers have been very active collecting and identifying mortal remains. So yes, there's some progress, but I would not still be overly optimistic, because if you just look at the sheer scale of the humanitarian needs in Sudan, it is huge. So what we need, I mean, we need like a huge logistical operation to be able to provide meaningful response. And we are still, unfortunately, we're still not there yet.
And yeah, on that particular point, I wanted to ask you, with the relative calm now being noticed and observed, what is the priority of ICRC and aid organizations in Sudan now, and what are you doing?
Well, for us, priority remains the same. The priority is to reach hospitals, those hospitals that are still functioning, because unfortunately, also, what we're seeing is that more and more hospitals stop working. According to our estimates, 80% of the hospitals in the capital Khartoum, they no longer operate. And at the same time, we have thousands of wounded people. So the needs, the medical needs are huge. And the priority for us to be able to reach hospitals with these supplies, but also try help them restore some of the essential infrastructure. Because, I mean, you need water to be able to operate a hospital. You need food for your staff. You need electricity. So all those things, they have been desperately lacking.
That's Aliona Sienko, regional spokesperson for Africa at the International Committee of the Red Cross. She spoke with my colleague Nabil Biejo from Nairobi, Kenya, this past hour. South Sudan's government and the World Bank have launched a $70 million four-year project in Juba to empower women and increase their access to incomes. The World Bank-funded project targets some 261,000 women across the country's 10 states and three administrative areas. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The World Bank's country director for Eritrea, Ethiopia, South Sudan and Sudan says the project will provide South Sudanese women access to finances and promote their businesses. Speaking at the launch of the project on Wednesday in Juba, Aya Benjamin Warile, South Sudan's Minister for Gender and Social Welfare, says the scheme will equip up to 90,000 women and girls across the country with entrepreneurial skills and extensive training needed for boosting economic growth and development.
It will finance the establishment of the Women's Economic Empowerment Centers as a space for livelihood and social skills training to women, girls, and boys on financial literacy, basic numeracy, and value chain skills. The project will offer women entrepreneurs opportunity as a facility to about 200 women and an extensive training to more 1,000 women entrepreneurs, which will help them boost their contribution to economic growth.
Speaking at a launch in Juba, Osman Dion, the World Bank's country director for Eritrea, Ethiopia, South Sudan, and Sudan, says South Sudan is emerging from a prolonged civil conflict which has affected incomes for women and youths. Dion adds that women across South Sudan should be given a chance to profit from the project.
And I want to insist on the fair chance to every single woman, wherever the structure of this project allow it, whether it is related to the woman entrepreneurial opportunity facilities. If there is an opportunity for any single South Sudanese woman, let us be transparent, let us be inclusive, and let's give them that chance. I do believe that success cannot happen without being organized. But we do it transparently. We do it fairly. At the end of the day, they are all South Sudanese women. They deserve a chance.
UN Women Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa, Maxim Hoinato, says the project should eliminate unemployment, poverty, and a lack of other sources of income for women in South Sudan.
This project that we are launching today has no value if it's not implemented into a framework where human rights are upheld by government, where we see like strong political commitment by governments to ensure that women are not just after small achievement in villages, in districts, etc., etc., but they are in a country where the environment is strong and the institutions are strong to protect them.
Some women in Juba welcomed the project, while others say they worry the money might only benefit few women. Nyan Ball, a resident of Juba who hails from Upper Nile State, attended the launch of the project and says she is yet to see the benefits of the project trickling down to women in rural areas.
Our problem in South Sudan is the corruption. We can come with a good strategy and initiative like this, but reaching another state, we spoil because of corruption. So we need people who are going to implement this project in transparency such that the women of South Sudan benefit out of this.
Another Juba resident, Lydia Koma, says she is happy that the project will restore hope and dignity of some women in South Sudan who suffered from gender-based violence.
So with this project, I'm sure it will really help those people. And they talked about building a house where they'll put the survivors. So it's really a good thing, like in case it's to happen. So, yeah, because still on the issue of gender-based violence, when they come up with the houses where they put the survivors, at least some people will have hope that, yeah, whenever they face something, they have where to run to.
The South Sudan Women's Social and Economic Empowerment Project is implemented by the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare with the support from the UN Women and the United Nations Population Fund. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the head of the UN mission in South Sudan says the parties that signed the 2018 peace deal have done very little to implement the agreement. Find out why after the break.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get, or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself, I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with a chill drink.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do to conserve your energy when it is very hot outside?
I drink lots of cold water because it relaxes me. So immediately I become dehydrated or I feel hot. I take in more cold water, yes, and it makes me okay.
Well, I live around the beach, so on a hot day, I just take a stroll on the shore wearing a light cloth so that I can feel the sea breeze around myself.
If it is hot, you have to make sure that you get somewhere where it is cool. You go and bathe. Those are normal things you have to do.
When I'm at my home, I undress. This is my home. I have a bedroom. My home is big. Why won't I undress?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on plus one 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, plus one 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says the parties in South Sudan's transitional government of national unity are too slow in implementing the revitalized peace agreement. UNMISS says South Sudan government is way behind schedule in fulfilling key elements in the peace deal. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Nicholas Asom, who is the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan and the special representative of the UN Secretary General, says the government of South Sudan has done very little to implement the country's roadmap for the extension of the transitional period. In August 2022, the signatories to the peace deal agreed to extend the transitional period by another 2 years, arguing that additional time was needed for completing some elements of the agreement. Asom told reporters in Juba Wednesday, the signatories of the 2018 revitalized peace have a long way to go.
The constitution-making process, electoral legislation, standing up the necessary institutions and structures, as well as creating the environment to support robust political competition, require tangible measures. The constitution-making process is, in our estimation, 10 months behind schedule, and elections planning is 8 months behind schedule. Several aspects of the transitional security arrangements are simply hanging.
The UN top diplomat in South Sudan says he recently met with President Salva Kiir and expressed concern over the progress in the implementation of the roadmap. He says 2023 is, in his words, a make-or-break year for South Sudan's leaders to complete the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement.
This is not the time to take our eyes off the ball. What we can learn from Sudan is how quickly matters can unravel if neglected. At the beginning of the year, I outlined the challenges and priorities facing South Sudan, and the scale of importance of what remains to be done does not leave room for inaction. We still see 2023 as a make or break year for this nation if it is to fully implement the peace agreement, which is to suggest that matters cannot be deferred to 2024.
Pogbot Balwang, SPLMIO Director for Communication and spokesperson in the office of First Vice President Riek Machar, says several factors are contributing to the slow implementation of the roadmap.
Lack of political will, lack of the role of the grantors of the agreement to carry out their duties, to supervise and to make sure that the agreement is being implemented in letter and spirit. We added the issue of lack of resources to it. They should play a bigger role or major role rather than pointing fingers to the parties.
The ANMIS chief, ASUM, says the rates of violence and human rights violations are still up in South Sudan.
Unfortunately, human rights bodies have recorded violations in various parts of the country, and the first quarter report showed a 12% increase in violent incidents affecting civilians compared to the same reporting period last year. Sadly, there have been minimal steps taken by relevant authorities to hold perpetrators to account.
He says attacks on humanitarian workers continue in South Sudan, adding that the future hangs on the successful implementation of the 2018 peace agreement.
And that is why we see the successful completion of the transitional period of the revitalized peace agreement as critical for putting South Sudan on the pathway to peace and sustainable development, and in persuading donors that South Sudan is a viable proposition.
Martin Ilia Lomoro, South Sudan Cabinet Minister and Secretary General for the High Level Implementation Committee of the Peace Agreement, says the signatories of the deal are working hard to implement the roadmap.
ISAM is being in a hurry. He knows that we just the government and the union minister agreed on a joint task force that will be dealing with the electoral and constitutional making process. He knows that, and he's the co-chair. He's co-chair between me as the Minister of Cabinet Affairs and ISAM as the head of UNMIS. We agreed that the priority would be the conduct of the conference on Chapter 5, which we all saw. And the next move, by next week, we'll have the first meeting of the Joint Task Force. We have a presentation of all the concerned institutions, ministries, commissions, as well as RGMEC, the Ministry of Justice, IGAD.
Lomoro says the new task force will mobilize funds for the constitution drafting process. He says ANMIS is doing very little to support the peace process in South Sudan.
We just had a conference on Chapter 5 and they contributed zero. They just talk. We have already formed a task force and we shall see what they can do.
South Sudan is scheduled to hold first elections as an independent country in 2024. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Jonglei State, where two people were killed and 39 children are missing after armed men attacked Duke County on Tuesday. The commissioner of Duke County says the missing children were ambushed along the road from Payuel to Panyang Payam. Dengai Deng has details for VOA from Bor.
Peter LaJor Chuol, the commissioner of Duke County, says a group of unknown armed men believed to have come from the neighboring Greater Pibor administrative area killed two people, injured several others, and allegedly abducted 39 children between Payuel and Panyang Payams on Wednesday.
Yesterday at 10 chop, we have 40 children who were in a car moved from Payuel on their way to Duke Panyang Payam. When they reach there, they fall into the criminal suspected from Greater Bibor. They abducted 39 and they killed two. Within that two, the one is one driver and one girl, and the wounded four. within amount of numbers.
VOA could not independently verify Commissioner LaJor's accounts. Sabila Joseph, the Greater Pibor Administrative Area Information Minister, says she is not aware of the recent abductions in Duke County.
There's no such information. I am now in Juba, but I have not heard of that information. Unless I make calls first to check it from people on that on the ground, I will have to get facts so I will be sure of what I will say, because this is a serious issue. It involves death.
Sabila says if the incident turns out to be true, the authorities in Pibor will trace the suspects and return the missing children to Jonglei State. Sabila says Greater Pibor Administrative Area Chief Administrator Lokali Ame has been conducting a peace campaign in Greater Pibor to sensitize young people about ceasing all forms of hostilities, including cattle raids, child abduction, and road ambushes. She adds that such violence threatens humanitarian activities in the area and the peaceful coexistence of the neighboring communities. Cattle raids, revenge killings, and child abduction have become a common occurrence in parts of Eastern Equatoria State, Jonglei State, and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, despite many goodwill agreements signed by the communities involved in recent years. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
And that report by Dengai Deng brings us to the end of this show for Wednesday. When I leave you with Eddie Kenzo and BP Phillips and the song Bulwamba.
Remix. BP on the track.
Mama tugende, baby Philip tugende, Eddie Kenzo tugende, Mwana Africa, Balumba remix, come dance with us, let's do the dance, call everybody, yeah. Here is the party, yeah.
Listening to Eddie Kenzo and Betty Phelps and the song Balumba. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Killa Williams, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.